Working Cows Podcast, episode 270. This episode is brought to you by Mystic Lubricants. For a look at their full range of top quality products, visit mysticlubes.com.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And this episode is brought to you by Mystic Lubricants.
Since 1922, Mystic Lubricants has been providing superior performance and protection for farmers who demand the most out of their equipment. Today, Mystic continues to develop products in real-world conditions that are specially formulated to meet the unique demands of your specialized machines. They provide advanced protection for engine longevity and are the choice of people who make a living working the land. Learn more about Mystic products at mysticlubes.com. That's M-Y-S-T-I-K lubes.com.
Very excited to be joined today by Scott Houck, and we're going to talk about maximizing our unfair advantage. You might also call this resisting vertical integration. You could go with that title as well if you wanted to. But we're going to talk to him about what is our unfair advantage and then how do we maximize it as beef producers, people working in the beef business, people working in the beef industry, and a little bit about why that term industry can be concerning. But I did want to let you know before we jump into our conversation with Scott that just a couple of public service announcements here on the front end, because I have heard that there are people who don't listen to all the way through the end of the episode. And so I wanted to go ahead and share a couple of public service announcements on the front end of that. I've also heard that there are people who don't listen to every episode, like they pick and choose the ones they want to listen to. I know, perish the thought. But for now, I will share with you this public service announcement. First one that I'm going to share with you is from the Kavira Coalition. The Kavira Coalition's new agrarian program applications for 2023 apprenticeships are open until December 15th. Apprenticeships take place on working ranches and farms practicing regenerative agriculture across Colorado and Montana. These 8-month full-time apprenticeships include housing, some food trade, and a monthly stipend, along with a host of supplemental educational and networking and support from Kavira staff to kickstart a career in regenerative ag. They begin in March and April of 2023 and run through November of 2023. You can learn more at kaviracoalition.org/newagrarian. So if you're interested in that, again, short notice, you got about 10 days from the time this releases to head on over to kaviracoalition.org/newagrarian and get signed up, get your application in, and get in the running to be involved in one of these 8-month full-time apprenticeship opportunities. So for your consideration, go on over to kaviracoalition.org/newagrarian. The second public service announcement I wanted to share with you was that there will be a change in the feed from for the Working Cows podcast. And so if you notice come the first of the year that your episodes aren't showing up where you expect them to be, you will be able to find them, as always, at workingcows.net/the episode number. So like today, the show notes page is workingcows.net/270. And, you know, by that time, we're probably looking at workingcows.net/275 or something like that. But somewhere around the first of the year, there will be a transition in the feed from the Working Cows podcast. So if you notice an interruption, it was planned, but I just wanted to let you know. And head on over to the home base of the Working Cows podcast, workingcows.net, to find everything that is up to date there. And if you notice an interruption, that's where you can go to fix the issue you might be having. So any questions about that, you can just reach out to me through the contact page. But without further ado, not usually having this windy of an introduction, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the Working Cows podcast, Scott Hauk, as we talk about resisting vertical integration. Scott, thanks for joining me again on the Working Cows podcast. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Clay. It's a pleasure to be back.
And recently I think this is probably a common theme with you, but recently on Twitter, you've been sharing some thoughts featuring the hashtag beef. And one of them that you shared on November 25th, it'll be linked in the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/270, says beef is the last food production system free of vertical integration. Why? Because we run on sunshine, water, soil, and forage. Don't ever surrender our unfair advantage or forget it. So I think you've got the unfair advantage kind of embedded there in the tweet, but let's just make it explicit. What is that unfair advantage that we have? And then maybe we'll talk about as opposed to what and talk about how to maximize it. But let's start there. What's the unfair advantage?
Well, Clay, I don't know much about the cattle industry, honestly. I'm just first generation. I've just been diving as deep as I can, trying to learn multiple generations of knowledge in one lifetime so I can pass something worthwhile down to my kids. And I do have a gift for, other than doing a little guitar playing from time to time, is seeing the kind of the essence of things, and things just become very clear to me. And if it's true, it kind of hits me right in the heart. And if it's not, I kind of am repulsed, you know? And so that's just something my whole life I've had some sort of a compass towards seeing things at work. And that's why I was so drawn to cattle industry and the beef industry, is because there is no other industry. And to even call it an industry, I think, is to kind of cheapen it a little bit, but just to use that word, there is no other industry, any other way that we can interact with the economy where the factory fundamentally regenerates the resource base. That is unprecedented. If it isn't, I'd like somebody to tell me of another industry that can do that. But every other industry, even the other industries that are fundamentally biological, whether it be crop production or chicken or pork. I mean, our unfair advantage in the ruminant industry is you can run the whole deal with zero diesel fuel. And many people do that. I mean, they just... and so I think that, like I said in another one of those tweets, if you can graze them and graze them right... And that comes with a certain aspect of discipline, one that I'm still learning and by no means an expert on. But we have the ability to raise a product that is not a result of a mining process, but is the result of abundant and regenerating process. And that is unlike any other industry I know of. And I think that... if the beef industry is going to continue to thrive and kind of avoid some of the vertical integration of the other proteins, I think we have to fully lean into our ability to graze animals, our ability to observe land, our ability to run almost entirely on solar energy. And that's what ranching's been for its entire history. And it hasn't been until very recently, until a lot of those technological innovations have changed that for better or worse. So,
yeah, very good. You know, Pete Farrell, in my episode with him, and I think it was in the episode, I know we talked about it on that call, about his aversion to the word industry as a descriptor or as an adjective for the beef business. And he's more talking about when we apply industrial methods to landscapes, disaster tends to mm-hmm. ensue, you know, tends to follow when we try to apply an industrial worldview to these landscapes, because they're way too complex to be to be controlled or to fully to be even fully understood at this point. I really think that we're kind of at the tip of the iceberg. The more we learn about how all of these pieces fit together, the more we realize we don't know about how all these pieces fit together. And I think that theory is a better word for most of it than science, because theory is just like we think it's we're like the theory of electricity. We're pretty sure we know it works this way, but sometimes it, you know, the box flares up and rips your arms off. You know, we just, it doesn't work like you, it doesn't always, it's a theory because it doesn't always work like we expect it to. If it always worked like we expected it to, it would be a science. And I think that that's, these landscapes are that way, that there's way more going on there than we fully understand at this point. And so when we try to approach it with an industrial approach, we are a lot of times unraveling a system that was really well designed by God, in my opinion, in my understanding, and sometimes the consequences of that are take generations to undo that unraveling. And so I think that all fits into what you're talking about as far as our unfair advantage, that these things are well designed.
Absolutely, Clay. I mean, what we have is, and I've got this kind of my Twitter bio, it's like, what's true is what works is what lasts, and what lasts is that which brings us into union with God. And if you just look throughout human history, the foundation of so many of, the foundation of us really becoming human was us harvesting ruminant animals. And so we're really talking about a relationship and a deep pattern that is mysterious in its breadth and depth, and really serves as what should be the foundation of an entire civilization. You know, I mean, I think it honestly, for me, and I don't think we're not trying to take this one too biblical, but I can't help it. It goes back to Cain and Abel, right? Abel was a shepherd who harvested and gave right offering because he had the fat of the land so available to him, because he was living rightly, and it was easier for him to offer that which was the most abundant to God than it was for Cain, who had scratched out a living and was, try as he might, didn't want to give his best crop. Right. You know, Abel was probably choosing from 1,000 lambs that were all equally fat, and he just chose the fattest ones, but that was the top 10% of everything that was right in the top 10%. And so I think what we have, and this gets to how folks, you know, you hear a lot of people in the cattle business nowadays talk about, well, don't talk about it as a business, or don't talk about it as a business because it's a lifestyle. Or they'll say, oh, don't talk about it as a lifestyle, it's a business. It's like, well, I think both people are right. The people who are talking about a lifestyle are getting at this kind of eternal pattern of the relationship between man and cattle, and how just if we are able to manage the grazing of ruminant animals, we fundamentally have a food production system that is eternal until the sun blows up, right? I mean, as long as the sun is shining and we can watch our grass and watch our animals, and this is coming from a guy who can't ride a horse, but knowing that I probably should learn how to ride a horse sooner or later, and I'm getting there all in due time. But it's like, if you've got a horse and you've got, you don't really need anything else. And so that's the people who are saying it's a lifestyle are speaking to that. The people who are saying it's a business are saying, well, how do we make this fit within the context of a global economy? And those two things seem to be at odds, because they quite technically are, right? I mean, one relies on biology or the physical manifestation of God's creation. The other relies on, and this being industry now that I'm talking about, industry or the global economy relies on technology, and that being the instruments of man. And so one answers to God alone, the other answers to man alone. And so, well, at least until it doesn't. And so this is kind of the tension I think we see in the cattle industry, right now. And as a first generation guy, whether it's valuable or not, I'm coming in and I'm kind of seeing this landscape and really thinking like, well, where do we go from here? Because there's people out there who have been doing it right for so long, and they're still getting the short end of a stick. I mean, they're great managers of their land. They're great managers of their cattle. They have amazing genetics, totally fit to their environment. They've got grass. They graze as long through the winter as they can most years. I mean, these guys are great operators, and they're still going to bring their product to market. Something that by the very means of the biological rules of the game, or by the creation rules of the game, is winning that game, right? And then they come in, then they bring that to the context of the technological world and those rules of the game and of industry. And it's like, oh, wait, there's a different game being played here, and I'm not getting rewarded for what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I don't have any answers, really, more just like a wondering of like, where do we go from here? Because it seems even the people who are doing the best at managing their forage, that are grazing their cattle in a very sound way, extended recovery periods, building soil, all the stuff we talk about, are still, it's a race to the bottom with regards to a least cost producer, right? Everybody's racing, and that will, to me, I'm just thinking about it objectively, that doesn't end when you have a market that's essentially not a market anymore, or seemingly going to become not a market. I mean, I'm not an expert on any of this, but it's just like, it doesn't seem to be, and everybody knows the numbers, if you have 85% of the industry controlled by four companies, that's pretty much not a market. and it's just like, where do we go from here? I don't know, but I think it's a foregone conclusion. And I said in one of those tweets too, it's a foregone conclusion, and that the last free people will be the cowboys. Mm-hmm. Just like, the last folks that we were fighting in westward expansion were the Apache, the Comanche, and the Lakota. These are all horse people that could hunt. Mm. Right. And so it's a similar relationship. And so it's like the last free people are going to be the cowboys, but it's like, are we going to have a town to bring our surplus back to? Are we going to have a rural community to return to? Or is it just going to be, are the cowboys going to be destitute? Right. Yeah. So that's kind of what it seems to, that the industry, and maybe I'm naive and coming into it, and maybe the industry, I'm sure maybe the industry has been through this before. And if it has, someone please correct me. But from all I see, this seems to be kind of unprecedented. And it's like, where do we go from here?
Yeah. Yeah. It's young. I mean, we get so wrapped up in the now that we forget how new this is and how unique this is in human history. And so I would say that similarly naive understanding, I don't think that this is has happened before. I think it is a pretty recent phenomenon. And I think it is technology, as you said, that has allowed it. And so I think it's an interesting position. But, you know, I just want to circle back around some of the things that you touched on there. Humans, from the Latin humus, which means from the soil, we come from dirt. You know, that was God's original breathing life into the dirt is what brought us into existence. And what did he put us here to do? He put us here to have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and that is what brings us into union, because God's purpose is to bring order from chaos. And we talked last time, you and I talked on the podcast, was about how your story has been moving from chaos to order. Would that be a fair summary of your story?
Oh, perfect.
And so that's the work of God. And we come into union with God when we unite our purpose to his, and his purpose is to bring order from the chaos. And so that's what taking dominion is about, is bringing order to the chaos. And so that's why the beef industry is an important and unique industry, is because, like you said, we've got this unfair advantage, and that's why it all fits together, I think, so well.
The Western way of life, right? Just cowboying, and is the world, when they think of America, it's essentially the quintessential like American identity. When they think of rural America, it's either hillbillies or cowboys. And people, there's such, and I think this just goes back to the deep subconscious. Why is this something that sticks with people? And it's because it's true, right? It's, people may not put words to this, or maybe they do, but it's like, they see that culture, they see that way of life, and they see, wow, that is a way that man has brought order to the chaos of nature in a way that is ordered enough to build a civilization around it, right? And the more I think about it, the more it's like, man, we need to just like, we need, why are we not, and I'm certainly biased, but the more I think about it, it's like, why are we not all in as a country? We need to be all in on cattle as the production system that is the foundation of our nation, right? We have the ability to raise here, to finish here on forage. I'm very confident of this, actually. My basic arithmetic has proved it to be true, so it must be. But I'm very confident we could finish 30 million head of cattle on forage in this country. I have no doubt about that. Someone please check me on my math, but there is roughly 40% of all the corn and soy acres alone in the country go to ethanol production, and you get maybe it's at best 1 gallon of diesel to 1 gallon of ethanol. At best, I've seen some people say it's 1 to 2. So at best, it's a net, neutral system. I mean, that's like 30 million acres of corn and soy. We could easily finish. And that's not even counting grazing rangeland better, grazing meadows better, grazing irrigated ground better. It's not even counting any of that. That's just, and this is why I think, you know, unfortunately, and, like I keep saying, I really am open to being correct on this, because I'm kind of exploring some of these ideas newly. And I want to get from people who have been in the cattle business and in this way of life for much longer than me to correct me on this, please, if I'm wrong. But it seems to me that the industry is caught up, and cattlemen are caught up seeing the scarcity side of the equation, right? There wasn't enough... talking about the weather and talking about the markets, two things that are completely out of their control. The price the packers are going to give you and whether or not it rains is stuff. It's like, and that seems to be all people like talk about or worry about. And it's like, that is the exact opposite attitude of what brought people west in the first place. Like these great pioneers, the ancestors of the people who have been out on these landscapes, who have developed the skills to live in this place, raising cattle in these for generations, and for what I think is time eternal forward, those same skills can be applied all the way into the future as long as we want to. But it took pioneers to come out here. And now that there's no more land, it's like nobody knows where to put that pioneering spirit. And so we put it into technology for a while, and it's like, oh, well, then we'll invest in more different genetic techniques. And how can we feed cattle more efficiently? How can we do this? It's like, let's put that pioneering energy into our own souls, into discovering how do we get out of our comfort zone and actually work together. Because to me, the only way out of what seems to be a big problem, because it's like at the point where people are talking about better calf prices in an inflationary environment, but like they're just talking about the calf prices. It's like cattle prices are getting a little bit better, but it's like, but it's like everybody's still not making the money they need to make.
Right.
And they're losing equity on their places, you know? And so it's like, how do we get out of this? I think we need to have the courage to go from what we know into the unknown. So it's that same pioneering spirit, but we need to apply that now to how do we actually kind of marry some of the biological truths and the deep truths of creation that make this way of life so bountiful if we're doing it properly, and then apply that to our thinking about how do we market cattle? How do we work together? And so, these are some of the things I've been thinking about recently that I've got my wheels really turning.
I can tell. But like you said, it's that pioneering spirit was driven by an abundance mindset, and it worked because it was, I don't know about their practices then, but early on you said we are in a system that is abundant and regenerating, not mining. We're not mining the soil to the point that we've basically got black styrofoam out there and we just go out and spray fertility on it and it'll grow whatever we want to grow. That's not what we're doing in the cattle industry. I think managed rightly or managed better. I don't, right, wrong, or indifferent, whatever you want to say, but managed well, I think we're not mining the soil. We're making it better. And so it's, as you said, it's abundant and regenerating. And that abundance of produce or production should be matched from an abundance mindset of there's room here for everybody. This isn't a zero sum game. And again, back to that other, thing that you brought up too, the lowest cost producer is just the last one to go broke. You know, the one who gets to play the longest is the lowest cost producer. So that's not the answer either, is to just reduce our cost of production down to the lowest it can possibly be, because ultimately the person who's got the biggest scale is going to be the one who wins that game too. You know, and so that lends itself to vertical integration. That lends itself to somebody else just outscaling everybody else and doing it at a lower cost per full-time employee than anybody else. And so there's got to be something other than, okay, I can do this cheaper than anybody else. I'm also getting paid for the services I'm providing to the ecosystem and to my neighborhood. And probably the best way to get paid for that is not to take the traditional marketing path. I would be my understanding of how to actually get paid for those services.
I agree 100%. Whether it's building the relationships necessary to even know when or where or how those, let's call them, ecosystem benefits or rangeland services that we're providing, how to get paid for those, whether that's coming or not. Well, that takes a lot of time and research and energy and courage to just get out of your comfort zone and call the right people, right? It's not necessarily an enjoyable or a fun thing. Direct marketing of your products is not, how do I say this? Well, I love talking to our customers. I love it. We had a customer come out today and I talked for 45 minutes with him about everything that really matters. You know, how do we live? How does God, what's God's will for us in our life? And then the guy bought some beef off us, right? It's like, so, but then again, the most stressful days I have has nothing to do with cattle or with land management. The most stressful days I have is with customers and numbers and making the business go. And so how do we, so I guess what I'm saying is it's that like, this process of going from what we know, which is managing cattle on land in a way that regenerates the resource base, towards genetics that function through thick and thin, right? How do we go from that to something that works in the, modern economic landscape, because the, like I said, it just does not feel right. And maybe it's just not fair, but it doesn't feel, I guess what I'm trying to say is it doesn't feel like capitalism. I guess what I'm trying to say is, because for me, capitalism, and from my understanding of what capitalism is, it's not what we're necessarily seeing now. It's who is providing. Capitalism should be neighbors, communities, up to the state level. I think that's maybe by the most that we can probably comprehend in our small little brains is that level of economy. But how are we having mutual beneficial interactions and trading mutually valuable goods and services? Okay. And there's immediate feedback in that because we know our neighbor, we know the community we're in, we know our customer, you know, and like we tell customers in direct marketing and this, in that world, we tell customers, well, it's good to shake the hand that feeds you. And I was thinking about that. I was like, man, that's the same thing. If all these cow calf producers actually shook the hands of JBS and Marfrig executives, they would never sell them another calf ever again. They would be disgusted about these guys because these guys are, I mean, you don't have to do too much digging to know that they're crooks and criminals. And it's like, I don't want to sell my product to a criminal because that's not the type of world I want to live in. I don't want to live in a world where my blood, sweat, and tears is becoming the economic unfair advantage of somebody who doesn't look to preserve my way of life, but actually looks to destroy it. Right. And it's so I think, how do we get out of, how do we move towards this? It's like, well, to me, it's about how do we work together? We need to talk to each other about something more than just the markets and the weather. We need to talk to each other about like, well, let's say we got 10 guys in a county that are all sizable cow calf guys. Let's just, for the sake of numbers, let's say there's 10 buddies. They all run 100 cows. Well, I guarantee you two of those guys, one guy doesn't really care what he runs. He just has the cows because dad had them or whatever, and he'd be fine running yearlings. And I guarantee another one of those guys would be fine finishing those cattle. And then through conversation, bring all the stakeholders to the table. If there's any, you know, bring the bankers to the table. Any local processor, bringing local grocery stores, bringing all the cattlemen to the table, all their families, getting people together talking, then we can actually say like, well, can we actually do something different here to where we don't have to just bring our cattle to the sale? These cattle are an extension of us as operators. They're a reflection of who we are and the decisions we make. And then, I mean, we're just kind of leave them to just, and I'm not necessarily against commodity industries. That's not what I'm trying to say. But what I'm trying to say is the sentiment that's behind that isn't about care and value. It's about profit and it's about turnover and it's about shareholder returns in countries far, far away. Mm. And so it's like, you know, the problem is the solution. We're not really talking to each other enough about the things that really matter because it's difficult and painful to admit that maybe I'm not doing something right. And I have some of my own experience to even share this. I'm not just saying like, oh, you need to talk to your buddies because it's easy. It's not easy to admit your own vulnerability, to admit your own fault of like where you feel like things aren't going right for you. And so, but if we, to me, the only way out of this is to do that. Is to speak to each other in a way to where, how can we work together as opposed to against each other? And because right now it's essentially, like you said, just everybody racing to be the last one to go out of business. And to me, that creates a scenario where you got ghost towns and some corporation owns all the cattle that graze around the ghost town.
Yep.
So that's, we don't want that.
Yep.
And so we got to do something else.
Yeah. I think, I don't know where Mike Calicrate said it. It might've been when I talked to him on the Working Cows podcast, but he said that essentially a lot of these pork and chicken guys are just janitors for Tyson, you know.
Oh my gosh.
They're just cleaning up, you know, cleaning up the manure that the pigs leave behind and Tyson owns the pigs from farrow to finish. And they rent some space on their land, you know, for those pigs to grow and be finished, you know? And so I think that is a potential path that the beef industry could go down. But it's not one we have to go down if we're willing to take advantage, as you said, of our unfair advantages and maximize them. You know, Joel Salatin said that technology
has given us the tools to put a gas pedal, a steering wheel, and a brake on these cattle and move them where we want them, when we want them, when they need to be there to maximize their growth. You know, technology's also given us the ability to communicate with people east of the Mississippi River, where we could finish a lot more cattle than we do, you know, because their ability to produce calories as far as for cattle to consume outpaces ours west of the 100th meridian. And so those cattle could continually conceivably move east into higher and higher calorie environments for their finishing needs, and they could be finished very at a very high quality level and convert some of those acres, you know, to grazing cover crops, you know, and you know, all the things you were talking about with corn and soybean acres. Those are monocrops. If we did multi-species cover crops, their calorie production potential, I would say, goes even higher. And right. Those cows can finish very quickly on that forage. And again, I don't think that you're off as far as the number of cattle this country could finish if we were willing to tweak some supply chains, or absolutely implode them and build them again.
But well, that's kind of the rub, isn't it? It's like kind of step between a rock and a hard place. And it's, but we have to always be about solutions and trying things, right? We have to always be about how do we leave the place better than we found it? Not only the landscape we're managing and the cattle that we're managing, but also the business that we're trying to leave behind for our kids to either be a part of or bear the fruit or have the fruits of. And so to me, it comes down to this really difficult thing because of getting out of our comfort zone. It's really hard to talk to each other about something that could be different or something that requires a little bit of vulnerability. It's not necessarily easy to talk about these things, but we used to say, go west, young man, you know, and that was the pioneering spirit. It was like, get out there. There's infinite opportunity. And there was, and it's like, well, now the West has all been essentially divided up and we have nowhere else to go but within. So go within, young man. You know, it's like that's, and it's going to be that level of creativity and people working together that's going to actually be the process by which we get out of this. And I'm actually fully confident and capable. You know, we may have to get pushed a little bit further than folks would like, but I actually don't think it's possible for, and I could be wrong, but I don't think it's possible for beef cattle to be vertically integrated to the level that that swine and that poultry have been, just for the mere fact of they can't get beef cattle to calve in feedlots. They just can't do it. They can't keep the calves alive because the rumen doesn't function. Mm. And so you can't it doesn't function well enough for mom to give good enough milk or for mom to even have to go through the labor process in a way that allows for the calf to even survive, you know? And so it's like that's kind of been the egg that they can't seem to crack. And it's been, I'm sure they've put millions into research and development to do that, or else they would have done it. Right. It would have happened. It's happened in dairy. It's happened somewhat in dairy or largely in dairy. It's happened in swine and in poultry, but the beef cattle, for whatever reason, that miraculous thing that is a beef cow, she just won't be tamed to that level and seemingly can't be. And so this is, I think what it is it's just continued recognition of the, like we start off with, the unfair advantage we have in this way of life, in this business of having something that is so true that if we do it right, it will work. And so, and it will work for as long as we want it to work. And so the difficult part comes in, well, how then do we integrate that with the physical and the economic system that we find ourselves in? And that's the rub, you know. What we've done on our ranch is direct market beef, and it's by no means been easy. right? It's been very painful when honestly, sometimes, and more from an ego standpoint of it's like, because as we're getting better at this, not everybody, you can't be everything to everybody, right? You'll have people complain about product that you think is a great quality product. How can you get any better than this? You know, but you have people complain about product. You have people that are difficult on you in the sense of like, logistical challenges and timing of delivery and all these sorts of things that have nothing to do with raising the cattle properly or taking really good care of the land. And so it's part of me wants to say, well, just, you know, flip on the bird and say, well, I'm out of here, you know, but it's like that. I can't make a living for myself without doing that. So I need to take a bite of humble pie and do what is necessary to continue to make that part of the business work. And I actually feel grateful for that because it's this continual feedback that makes me think outside the box, more likely to listen, more likely to try to see from other people's perspective and help me to critically think in the way that actually keeps the ranching side of the business fresh and renewed, right? If your only part in the cattle industry is just raising calves, then it's going to be really easy to get stuck in ruts. Even if you obsess over the grazing or over the genetics or some aspect of it, it's going to be really easy to get stuck in ruts because you're never thinking about anything other than that. And some of the best thoughts that I have about how to be a better cattleman, how to be a better grazer, what to do with a certain field and reflecting on the state of a certain field and some of the weed pressure or these things or water availability or any of these things, some of those best things will come to my mind when I'm interacting with a customer. And it's like these dots are getting connected that I don't understand how or why. But it seems to be that when we have a more holistic approach, we get more holistic answers. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're not closed off to that as a possible answer, you know, I mean, you've got to be even open to that answer coming to you to get that answer at all. So, you know, and I think that kind of what you've been talking about here is reminding me of something that Alan Savory always says whenever you have him or asking him a question, where he always starts is imagine the life you want. You know, like, what do you want to do? What do you imagine the life that you want to create, the world you want to create for your family and for your neighborhood and for, you know, and so does the life that you want involve is dealing with people as your customers purchasing cuts of beef from you? Is that the life you want? If it is, then you can go and create it. And if it's not, then you can do your part in that supply chain to create a great product that can get passed on to somebody who's willing to pay you more for it than you would get in a commodity system. And then you just hone those skills to become the best that you can be at that and develop that network to allow you to get paid as much as you can for those skills. But I think that probably the biggest leverage point that we've got in the beef industry is probably going to be taking these animals to that finish point, but not everybody has to do it. And so we can develop those networks and those relationships to open up opportunities outside of the normal chain that they have been going down and reap the benefits of that labor. And it's all work. Like you said, it's all work, developing those chains, developing those networks. It's all work. But so is, you know, calving in the middle of winter to raise the biggest calf you can, you know, to send to town in November. That's work too. It's just a different kind of work. And we won't change until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And so we've got to get to that point where we recognize where this is all headed and say, okay, what are other opportunities? What are other options? And pursue those other options.
Absolutely, Clay. For me, in our business, you know, our one big thing for us that's been most difficult is being able to get an offer a traceable, consistent source of where the cattle were finishing or coming from. You know, we'd tell people, well, we got some of these from over there and that we know them and they've got the practices that are up to our standards. And, but that was getting harder and harder to find here locally. And then we were like, well, maybe we just need to get some of our own cows and then raise them all the way up. But that's not an efficient use of the feed that we have access to. And so that has kind of become a dead end. And this has all been in 6 years. So that you're seeing a lot of iterations of a business model with a lot of feedback that is very difficult to work through. But we wouldn't be where we are today, which is with the opportunity and to be strictly in the finishing business and in the marketing and in the distribution and the sales business, and to work with a ranch, here in Colorado that, can send us the quality of cattle that, we know our customers want and essentially as many as we can finish. We wouldn't have gotten that opportunity, or we wouldn't have even had the chance to, have the conversation that led to both of us operators knowing that this could potentially be a good relationship. We wouldn't have had any of that if I wouldn't have taken a big deep breath and kind of asked the first question, you know, well, what, how's everything going for y'all? Are you satisfied with what you're getting for your cattle? And like, how is there, do you think there's a better way? Are you open to, you know, or would you be willing to send us cattle, you know, and figuring out a deal to where that'd be worthwhile for them? And so this is, these are all, the hardest part is just asking that first question, right? It's the hardest part is just stepping out from what you know of just like, oh, well, I could just talk to this guy about cattle, or I could go into the unknown and ask him if he'd be willing to send us cattle and him say, absolutely not. Don't ever ask me again. That's ridiculous. We know what we're doing. You know, we're not looking for any partners, none of that. Right. And so, and that would kind of, that'd be a bruise to the old ego, you know, but, we have to, find what we're good at, be willing to do the things necessary to scale what we're good at so we can actually bring, a product to the customers, whether our customer is a yearling guy or whether, and we're in the cow calf business, or whether our customer is a finishing guy and we're in the cow calf and yearling business, or just the yearling business, or whether our customer is the consumer and we're selling them beef. We have to be willing to do what we're good at, know that we're good at that, and then be unafraid to communicate that to people in our community who are in the same business and not see each other as competitors. Well, I just need to get a bigger calf than him, but see, hey, do you even like having cows at all? You know, would you be wanting to run yearlings? Like just asking people these sort of questions, you know, because we don't know the answer until we ask. And I'm sure there is enough people out there who have beautiful cow herds that love their cows, but they'd be open to running yearlings based on their resource base or based off how they like to graze or anything. But we don't know these questions. We don't know the answers until we get out of our comfort zone and ask some people the difficult question. And the most difficult thing to say sometimes is like, hey, are you willing to work with me? Right. Are we willing to work together? You know, that's not always easy.
Yeah. What has been kind of the process that you've gone through? I mean, you've shared a little bit about that, but what's been the process that you've gone through that's led you to the business model you have? Why did you land there?
Well, for whatever reason, God has opened up the opportunities to us to where the only thing that makes sense is for us to finish cattle and sell them. We have an ability to, even though it's difficult to deal with customers, we know we enjoy it enough to want to keep doing it. So even though it's difficult, so we enjoy it enough to want to keep doing it. We have a resource base now that has expanded in the last couple of years here in the Mancos Valley, unexpectedly. There's a lot of, everything's getting divided up in a lot of these rural Colorado towns. And luckily a lot of the land here is in conservation easement, but you still have farm and ranchettes that, you know, there's 20 irrigated acres here, 40 irrigated acres there. And the Mancos Valley is a pretty small little valley. It's only about 8 miles wide. You know, from when you come down off the La Plata Mountains and go out towards Mesa Verde, it's not far. And so it's not very wide. So we've been able to put a niche together of working with over a dozen landowners of leasing a lot of these little irrigated pastures, but they're very productive, especially when you're grazing them the way that we're grazing them. And if you can keep water on them and graze them properly, we can finish a lot of cattle. And these opportunities just kept coming up to the point where now we're managing a little over 1,000 acres, and God willing, that may double for this next growing season. And so we're in talks to potentially double that. And so as a result of the resource base that we have access to, and as a result of the customer base that we have access to, where do we fit in regards to the cattle production? What makes the most sense? And for our customers, the thing is that they want to know where the calves came from, where the yearlings came from, how they were raised. Is there an ability to verify that there is no antibiotics or hormones that went into those cattle before we got them? And if we can do that, then the supply chain still remains very short. It's a two-person supply chain from birth to the plate of the consumer, you know, three-person counting the consumer, right? So it's the family that we're working with who raises the calves and yearlings, and it's us, and then it's the customer. Well, four, I guess, with the, I'm thinking out loud now. So four, I guess, with the folks that are harvesting it for us. So for whatever reason, this is kind of what has come up, and as a result, we're really focusing in on the beef entirely. And kind of, we've raised hogs in the past, we've raised chicken in the past, and doing whatever we could to be diversified on the little piece of land that we have and to make that go. But with our resource availability, it's just made the most sense from a quality of life standpoint. It's a lot easier for me to raise 100 to 120 grass finished cattle and get a guy to a part-time to help me irrigate than it is for me to raise 80 hogs a year, 50 head of and the sows to raise those pigs, and 50 head of cattle and all the chickens and get them all processed. It's like, from a quality of life standpoint, we can actually put ourselves in a better ecological state. We're a part of the land to market program through Savory. Mm-hmm. And the land that we were raising the hogs in and the chickens was coming along well and was getting healthier. But the land where we were doing this high stock density grazing and moving the cattle on and moving them off, I mean, anywhere from moves every few hours to moves once a day or twice a day, you know, or once every 2 days, you know, it just depends on the context. But the long and short of it is that the data does not lie. And where we were raising the cattle and doing that sort of grazing, the ground was coming along in almost seemingly miraculous fashion. I mean, it was because really this is cow country. It's hoof and ruminant country, you know? And so it just makes more sense, that the landscape would respond so much more, intuitively to that sort of management. And so, anyways, it's so from, like I said, from a quality of life and a family standpoint, it's much better for us. From a land management standpoint, the data, we got that data back and it was like, well, we can't really ignore this. You know, if we're really about being regenerative, this is what we need to do. And it's going to be difficult for us to go from selling 40 to 50 beefs a year to 100 to 120. That's not necessarily an easy thing to do, even if you have the skills to do it. Right. And so that's a little bit scary, but we're grabbing it by the horns and we're going to make it happen. God willing. And then the final thing was financially. It's just, I can leverage my labor over a lot more revenue dollars. And like I said, 100 to 120 grass finished cattle that we're marketing than all those other ancillary, valuable, but, difficult to get efficient and effective. I mean, there is such a thing as death by diversity. And this is a bit of a tangent, but I've experienced this. Mm. We have been fighting for our lives as a business, and still grateful that we're able to make a living. I'm not saying that we're by any means going broke or anything like that. We're able to make a living, but it's been, I think, more difficult than it would have been if we would have focused on one thing and gotten really, really good at that one thing. But our resource base, our land base, didn't really allow us to do that. We had to diversify and in order to do that. We couldn't make a living just selling the cattle that we raised off our place. It wasn't, even if they're all grass finished and sold at the highest dollar, it wasn't anything we could make a living doing. And so, as much as we can take into the entirety of our holistic context, that's kind of been our maturation as a business and as a family trying to do this and do it well. And, just be careful. I would just, any young guys out there, if I can offer you any advice, if it's even worthwhile, my dad says, that's my 2 cents and that's what it's worth, you know? So whatever, if it's worthwhile advice, don't try to do too many enterprises right at the beginning. There is very much a death by diversity is real. It's really hard to get efficient and effective at all those things. Slippage of money and time and resources becomes an all too common problem. And it did for us. Maybe you're better at it than me. And I hope you are, and Godspeed, you know, but it's difficult to run a multi-species enterprise and direct market everything and do it all well. It's very difficult.
Yep. Yep. And scale tends to be a challenge, as you've alluded to as well. And Tom Kravitz, in his great book, Ranching Like a 12-Year-Old, talks about exactly that. He said, we were in great shape because we were running ourselves ragged, trying to, run chickens and hogs and sheep and cows. And yeah, that diversity of all their different digestive systems and their hooves and their mouths and the way they all approach landscapes is great. And it is, but at the end of the day, I'm team people, all the way. And if a billion or a trillion microbes have to die for my grazing, for my people in my grazing plan to thrive, then, I guess that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make, And so I think that we need to take the human cost of these idealistic approaches into account too, and make sure that the human sustainability is top of our mind all the time.
Well, that actually is a really perfect application of the word sustainable, right? Because it's like we can do all these regenerative practices and build these businesses that are incredibly diversified and direct marketing and everything, but it's like, can you sustain that? If you can't sustain it, if the people aren't able to stay in a state of being that is healthy, where mom and dad aren't constantly bickering or worse over the details or over the inefficiencies or over the money or over all these sorts of things. And just if the people are having their needs met, then actually that is the fundamental basis upon which we design our ecological businesses, right? It has to be all about people. Otherwise, there's no point to any of this. It's totally, and I was very naive, getting into regenerative agriculture. And I'm just going to be honest. Like I wanted to be Joel Salatin of the West, I wanted to be the guy who took all these practices and made it work in a brittle landscape and did this and did that. And yada, 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 everybody pat me on the back. But God is so good. Because through his creation, he reveals to us that which we need most and that which we need to work on most. And I got humbled over the course of the first 5 years doing that here in Mancos, that was not going to be our path. And I'm so grateful that he opened up other doors to us and that we've, at least for now, been humble enough to walk through those doors, cautiously, but we think rightly. It's just a matter of we need to focus on, can I do this my whole life as me, Scott? Can Scott manage this business until I'm old in a way to where if I'm doing it when I'm old, I'm not broken, but I'm still enjoying it. And I can see myself moving electric fence that way. It keeps me limber, it keeps me moving, but it's not the most taxing thing in the world either. It's kind of the best of both. And, am I able to do it in a way, and this is another savory quote that I love so much, where I can be the person to where I can be everyone around me wants to help me reach those goals. So I can be a father so loving and so caring and so thoughtful to where my kids want to be out there with me. I can be a husband so loving and caring and thoughtful to where my wife wants to cheer me on as I go after, you know, as I go out to move the cattle for the fifth time that day, because I just love it. You know, I just love it. And so, but I have to carry myself in a way to where I'm a joy to be around. And if I'm running myself ragged, I'm not going to be a joy to be around. So it's, we really, Clay, I appreciate you saying that, because I think sometimes in regenerative agriculture, we get caught up in the substance of the thing and miss the essence of the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like we get caught up in like multi-speciation and cover crops and all the stuff. And it's like, it is, and it is not about any of that.
Right.
It more so is about, can our families gather around a table of the food that we grew, that we sell to our customers from now for as many generations as we want to do it.
And be right? better off as a result of it.
That's right.
Right. And here's the thing. The bottom line is technology serves people. People don't serve technology.
Amen. And my goodness.
The bottom line is ranching serves people. People don't serve ranching. Landscapes serve people. People don't serve landscapes. And so I think we need to keep all of those things in perspective, because anything, the flip of that, people serving technology, people serving landscapes, people serving ranching, that's idolatry. That's worshiping something other than the one true and living God. And so we need to avoid that at all costs, because idolatry is slavery. And you become enslaved to technology. You become enslaved to ranching. You become enslaved to landscapes when they replace God and people as the primary things that you are serving. Because that's what Jesus said, love God and love neighbor. That's the summary of the law. And so whenever whenever those two things get replaced by something else, we end up slaves. And so we need to make sure that we're avoiding that. And I have no idea how we got there from where we started, but it was a good conversation.
No, it's perfect, Clay. If we want to remain free, that's what we need to keep our focus on. And that's the gift we've been given, is that we can choose to remain free by focusing on that which is eternal. And
yep.
That's it.
Yep. Very good. Well, and I don't think we could talk about this for hours and not be any closer really to cracking the nut than we are now. And I think it's a good place to wrap up. And if you got some time, I wanted to do some bonus content on some of the other out of the box ventures you've been on recently. But for now, I'll let you go, and we'll capture that bonus content on the other side if you're content with where we're at.
I am, Clay. Thanks so much.
Since 1922, Mystic Lubricants has been providing superior performance and protection for farmers who demand the most out of their equipment. Today, Mystic continues to develop products in real-world conditions that are specially formulated to meet the unique demands of your specialized machines. They provide advanced protection for engine longevity and are the choice of people who make a living working the land. Learn more about Mystic products at mysticlubes.com. That's M-Y-S-T-I-K lubes.com.
Very good stuff there. As always with Scott, really appreciate him taking the time to join me and share some of his thoughts. And he has as always, been on fire on Twitter. And some of his latest tweets will be linked in the show notes page for today at workingcows.net/270. workingcows.net/270. You can go there and find that some of those tweets and some of the other links that are relevant to Scott and what he's got going on, him and his family have going on. Really looking forward to next week on the Working Cows podcast. Going to be welcoming back to the show Ray Markser, author of Cowboy in a Corporate World. It's a fantastic book. If you haven't gotten your hands on a copy of it, it's very well laid out, very well put together, very well written. It's just a great book. Hardcover is well worth getting. Would encourage you to go and seek that out as well. But we're going to talk to Ray about one of the chapters in his book where he talks about employee retention and how they had gone about retaining employees through a compelling mission and vision. And so we'll talk all things employees with Ray Markser coming up on episode 271 of the Working Cows podcast. We'll talk about finding them, getting them, keeping them, and what to do when they don't work out. We'll talk to him about all those things real soon on another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.